Kicking off hour number two of Three and Out right here in the Fox Sports Knoxville studios. It's Fan Run Radio. Houston Crest, Davey Hudson, Julia Ramsey on the ones and twos this morning. What do you think Nate's doing? What do you think he's on a vacation?
Yeah.
Like a softball tournament? Or you just want to sleep in? We didn't get Friday off. He made us work, and then he takes Monday off. It seems a little self-serving. I'm just saying.
I'll back him up. I don't know if this is for sure the case, but I'm pretty sure he went out of town for Easter, and they ended up staying.
Okay.
And
safe for
him and the fam.
Safe travels.
Yeah. Instead of coming back very, very, very late last night.
The weather was treacherous.
Stayed this morning and probably driving back right about now. That's my guess.
He's still
actually
asleep.
It's 8 o'clock.
He might be starting to scramble some eggs. Maybe scrambling some eggs right now. Sounds pretty good. A lot of people have tweeted in about the cost of college, like in general now.
I can speak on that. One of the reasons
these financial numbers are so high, like, you know, the NCAA looks at this number, $16,000. Well, yeah, it's because the damn textbooks are so expensive. It's because going to class is so expensive. Tony Vitello, right? He wants more scholarship dollars. Well, it's because the scholarships are so much money when you break it down on the bottom line.
Do you recall the most expensive semester you had for books? Like how much you had to spend one, like for just a single semester? Like what it ended up being your record for your time at UT?
I want to say, I'm not 100% sure, but I want to say it was like $500 to $600.
Okay.
That feels right. And now I feel like $500 or $600 might get you like a book and a half.
I've been at UT since 2012. And I can't remember what
law
year
school's
it was.
Probably a lot more expensive for the books you have to have, right?
Yes, but I feel like for most of the classes, like a lot of the individual books are more expensive. I had one that was $350.
The one book by itself, $350.
Yeah, and it was brand new, and it was because they didn't have any other options.
Gotcha.
And so it wasn't like I could get like an older version.
Sure.
Because a lot of people, what they do is they go and they find the edition before whatever the most recent one is, and there's really not much of a change
Correct.
At all. And you
Correct.
Can get the same material, same information. I had one semester where I paid $750 for the whole semester just for books.
Well, my favorite is the professors that write their own book and then force you to buy it.
But that's all law school is.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'll never forget. Like I think this was it might have been History of Rock, I think.
Okay. I didn't take that class, but I knew a lot of people who did.
And I wish I could remember the professor's name. But they'd had the same textbook for years. Years and years and years. I mean, you could go to any secondhand bookstore or the UT bookstore, and they were just all over the place. They were dirt cheap. And we get in on the first day, and he's like, I've written a book for this class for this semester, and you will be... It's brand new. I was just like, of course. And of course, it was like $200. History of Rock and Roll, $200 textbook. I was like, good move on you. Padding your own pockets while also collecting salary and making all these kids buy your book. Genius. Genius move. I mean, I'm sure you put in a lot of time to write the book. It's also music. Like, it's cataloged everywhere. We probably didn't need a new book reminding us how much you like Bob Dylan. He's a big Bob Dylan guy. He's also a big Zeppelin guy, which I appreciate. So it was a little bit of give and take. But yeah, Captain Touchback tweets in, part of the issue is the cost of college. It's insane how much more expensive it is now than it was 20 years ago. You could pay for college with a part-time job back then. Now you go into six-figure debt. That's a problem. That makes it more unfair for non-scholarship athletes. Joe Nathan tweets in, not that Joe Nathan, a different one. Tuition is the new mortgage that has the added benefit of no long-term shelter. Disgruntleball tweets and says, I once dropped a class in college because the book was so damn expensive. Like, this is the problem. Like, we're pricing out education. Like, it's just too expensive now. Because you've got all these online colleges, right? You've got all this online opportunity. So not as many, you know, non-athletes and non- really, really wealthy people are even going to college. They're like, I'll go to University of Phoenix, pay a fraction of what you pay, and really it's just the degree that matters and it's fine. So what that does, though, is makes all these universities, as their enrollment starts to drop, let's just hike the prices up. It's like Tennessee tickets, right? Oh, wow, attendance is down. Well, that's okay. Just raise the price of everything in the stadium and everything's going to be fine. Raise the ticket prices, raise concessions. We'll make that money back on the back end. It's a bad business plan. But that's why these numbers are so outrageous. I mean, what's the percentage of total allotted, you know, book scholarship that Cal Poly could have given? And what's 16,000 of that? We're talking like probably under 10%, right? Easily.
Yeah. For sure.
And we're just gonna hammer Cal Poly on this? Because books are so expensive. I mean, I know this isn't necessarily the NCAA's fault, but they just don't see it like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't understand, hey, the reason these numbers are so inflated is because it's just so damn expensive to go to college.
Their punishment system's just outdated as well, and or at least how they go about setting whenever you should be punished. And, I mean, I know we've talked about there just needs to be a complete overhaul of the system. And I feel like the Power Five schools could easily break off and form their own league, and to where you then like kind of like make the rest of the universities more of like another like minor league kind of system, and you could still bring them in to play games whenever you wanted to pay them. But we just keep getting farther and farther away from what seems to be reasonable in terms of punishments that are being handed down. And I just don't see it stopping anytime soon. Like, eventually you're going to have a breaking point to where the school are just like, I don't care what you say. I'm not abiding by whatever you've set forth.
Well, that's the thing. It can't be one, right? Like, it has to be a group of schools. And people have said the Power Five could do this, like, with the snap of a finger. They could essentially say, hey, NCAA, we appreciate all the infrastructure. We appreciate, you know, putting on these tournaments, putting on these events. We appreciate your deals with CBS, with ESPN, with ABC. We're going to go on our own and use the brands that we've established and just do Power 5 versus Power 5. So it'd be 65 teams, because Notre Dame's going to make it, of course. Might have to actually join a conference, though. And then maybe you expand a lot of these conferences, or, you know, call it a Power 6 and go create another conference of some mid-majors that are kind of always in the hunt, right? Yeah. Like, you know, Boise State, teams like that. And just say, we're taking the biggest and best brands in college, you know, football and basketball, and we're going to go do it on our own.
You could do the Power 6 for basketball, Notre Dame. They're already in the ACC on the basketball
right,
side.
Exactly.
So just...
It all kind of starts with football, because that's where
the money maker. Yeah,
yeah. So,
but they've got the system in place where it's like we could easily slide this over and you be fine moving forward.
So the NCAA says no, you can't play. What do they have? NCAA police? Are they just going to show up and like stop the kids from taking the field? Like what are the punishment really? Like, if the NCAA told a coach, hey, you can't coach for three games, and he just came out anyway, like, what are they going to do? They're going to tell you the wins don't count? All right. Then what? Well, we're not going to put you in the tournament? I guess, like, that's the power.
Withhold disbursement of funds from TV rights deals? I don't know.
That's
exactly
the thing. I don't know, because a lot of that goes through the conference now. So it's the SEC.
If you can get the conference.
Right, it's the SEC that divides. Now, the SEC is also beholden to the NCAA. I mean, it starts at the head of the conference, right? But if the SEC said, man, we're done with you guys.
Yeah, like, Sankey's like, all right, we've had enough.
We're done with you guys ruling from the ivory tower in Indianapolis, and we're on the ground floor here trying to figure this out. For a conference like the SEC, it would be very beneficial because they just make so much money anyway. And right now, this is weird. It kind of started with football, which almost seems backwards. But like the SEC right now is like a volcano exploding. Got really good in football in the 2000s, won all the BCS championships, college football playoff starts. You're in it every year, sometimes with two teams. Then all of a sudden, basketball is taking it seriously. They're hiring really good coaches all across the league. They get seven teams in the tournament this year.
Yeah.
And we're like a frog's hair away from eight. And now we looked it up during the break. Baseball at one point had 10 teams in the top 23. Like, the SEC is dominating collegiate athletics. Like, Greg Sankey right now could be the guy to lead this whole charge and say, yeah, we're telling the NCAA to go shove it, and we're starting our own league. We're starting our own body of rules here. We're gonna completely revamp this and make sure it benefits the student athletes, and we're going to govern ourselves. Because that's the thing, the NCAA, they take all this money from the big schools, and they use the excuse of, well, look at how many teams we have to govern. Look at how many people. Look at how many lawyers we have to have. It's expensive to run this organization. If I'm Greg Sankey, I'm saying we can do it, pay all of our people more than what you're paying your people, and still have way more left over to go back to the kids, to go back to the schools, to the institutions. We can help lower prices of tickets, lower concession prices, and get bigger and better TV deals because we don't need as much to actually make more once you cut out the NCAA middleman. I just don't know if it's realistic.
Someone's willing to do it.
Someone's going to do it. I remember talking about this on the radio like 5 years ago, thinking, man, this is like right on the precipice of happening. Still doesn't seem like it's that close. I mean, you've heard whispers of it, right? You've heard some, was it Nick Saban who said, we need a commissioner of college football? That, to me, sounds like I'm going to be king in the North, and I'm coming for the throne in a few years. And he's right. But it could just be the commissioner of the Power Five, and you just tell the NCAA, you're out. And if that happens, everything changes. All the schools are probably better off. It levels the playing field, and it helps the money go to the people that make it, not the institution that somehow takes credit for student athletes, coaches, and institutions who have built these brands, if it was called the college basketball tournament and not the NCAA tournament, does it still get watched by as many people if it's on CBS?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was called the Power Six championship tournament, yeah, man, like it's probably going to get just as much viewership. Oh, we're going to invite in, 32 mid-majors from outside the Power Six to also be in this tournament. Like, are you kidding me? People go crazy over that. Nothing has to change except you tell the NCAA, you're out. And we're going to keep the money and use it for the kids. Just takes somebody to do it. I'm really hoping that kind of happens. Because stuff like this Cal Poly thing, the Nike shoe deal, the money under the table, where the NCAA just plays dumb, where teams self-report and then get hammered, but the coaches who lie and lie and lie or just create really creative truths. No, this wasn't a fake school. Everyone could take the classes that didn't exist. Oh, it wasn't just for athletes. Well, you're North Carolina. You make us a bunch of money. We're good to go.
We don't want to hurt you in the long run. That hurts us.
They blamed Sylvia Hatchell, right? They blamed the women's program. They were the ones that cheated. And then she gets touted as racist and has since resigned, which is, I don't know. Seems like maybe the school was looking for a way to get her out of there anyway. Roberto's on the horn. He wants to chime in on the tuition costs, maybe a little bit of NCAA stuff. Roberto, welcome to Three and Out. Good morning, bud.
Top of the morning, gentlemen.
And to you as well.
Houston, did you catch the episode last night? No spoilers, but did you catch the episode?
I did.
Top 10 for me, for sure. Maybe even top 7. It's a great episode. Did you see our guest appearance? I'll text you about it later, but did you see our guest appearance about 75% away through the show? We had a guest appearance of somebody who's not been there in a long time. One of my favorite characters.
I don't know. Text me.
I will.
And then tune and then call back in Wednesday because we need to talk about last night.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was an incredible episode. I thought they brought a lot of things around. Anyways, so guys, this tuition thing, you're really hitting me with something that hurts really bad. I was an okay baseball player, and I considered playing in college. And everywhere I looked, I really wanted to play in college. I really did. But the most I think I got as an offer was like 33%. That's like of total books, tuition, and room and board, right? And none of them were in-state institutions. So I was going to have to leave the state, and it was just going to be cheaper for me to go to a state university and pay my way all the way through, right? And that is complete BS. Now, I understand the scholarship limitations and all that, but guys, should they just remove scholarship limitations? Is that kind of what you're purporting?
I mean, I understand why they do it, right? Because they don't want the big rich schools to have just such an advantage over
right.
the little schools. But they already have that advantage.
Exactly. And the NCAA, you would think, okay, here's what you're saying, because you're thinking logically, Houston, and that's what you're supposed to do. But you're dealing with the NCAA. So they're not only are they giving an advantage to the larger schools, they're widening the gap by every single ruling they do. Mm-hmm. By hammering Cal Poly for, you know, I guess, essentially giving extra money for books, right?
For $16,000 over 4 years to 30 kids.
Right. So $480,000 versus...
No,
that's total.
16...
Oh, total.
Total.
Okay, I thought, okay.
50 wow. cents a day no. for 1 year for each kid.
Okay, that was... I misunderstood the numbers earlier. I thought you were saying
four years.
480, though. How many free educations did the University of North Carolina give to basketball players over a... And probably football as well. Over a... let's say the same amount of time. And the University of North Carolina in-state ain't cheap, brother.
No.
Okay? It's like 16, 17 grand a year to go there in-state. Out-of-state, it's like $48,000. Talking about millions of dollars. And you want to, I mean, that's truly, that, I can't even go there, but it's just basically bending the rules so much that they're even giving the larger schools the bigger advantage. Like you know that if Wright State steps out of line in basketball and does the exact same thing, they're getting hammered to the frigging Stone Age.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And it's, to me, it's so unfair, and they're widening the gap. I totally agree. They should do away with this bogus NCAA relationship. Go back to the, do you guys remember the CFA, the College Football Association?
Vaguely.
If you watch old stuff from like the early 90s, you'll see a little blue football in the end zones between the uprights, and it says CFA. They should go back to that. And it was the NCAA existed, but it wasn't the, you know, 50,000 pound gorilla it is now. And there was just some differences in how they did things. And I'm not even a proponent of you know, giving more money to certain sports. I don't know if you should equally divide the money amongst the sports, because football in college athletics is such a an elephant, you know.
Yeah, I think it should be proportionate, but I also think that like some of the college football spending is kind of outrageous, and I think a lot of schools and a lot of conferences would benefit in the long run by taking some of the money that they really just waste and reallocating it either within their own university or to other, you know, lesser than universities that you kind of need. And I'm not knocking Carson Newman, but like if Tennessee and Carson Newman or Austin Peay or UT Chattanooga had some type of an agreement, mm-hmm. where you're kind of helping to fund those schools. I mean, especially in the UT system, like wouldn't that make some sense as
UT Martin?
Yeah, as a sister school, like, doesn't it benefit you if those schools are doing well academically and athletically? And I know there's a little bit
Absolutely.
That goes on there, but instead of, you know, new Jumbotron. Like, okay, do we need that, or would it be wise to give, you know, $1 million to UT Martin football?
Don't you love the pro? It's like a small business owner every year buying a new car to put it to scale, and not just a car, like a Raptor, right? Like a really nice truck,
yeah.
Or like a Tesla or something. That's what it is.
Remodeling your house every 2 years.
Exactly. We have so much freaking money that we got to get rid of it, or we're going to get drilled to the wall. I know there are 501c3 over there, so they don't get taxed the same way as every Joe and
Correct.
Sue small business.
Correct.
But they still have, you know, they got to get rid of the money at some point, because if not, the university itself, the academic side, is going to start asking for money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they got to say, oh, we just don't have any. And they're actually doing what I've said to do for years. I don't actually ironically agree with the contract they just gave Rick Barnes. But they're investing in people, not things,
yeah.
Which I think is really good. And lastly, guys, you talked about textbooks. Somebody maybe said they texted in or called in and said they dropped the course because the book was too expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you want to talk about ridiculous. I had a history course at UT that the professor, it was 5 books, and it cost as much as all my other books for that semester combined. So I dropped the course.
Did he write the 5 books? Was he the author of the five?
The three large ones, yeah.
Yeah.
And isn't that such a freaking racket?
Yeah.
That's such a racket. We had a teacher, they were on the 28th edition of their book, and if I'm lying, I'm dying. They'd only been a professor for 22 years. How does that even work?
Got to keep it fresh.
They were flipping in the middle of a semester. They were in a 101 class, and they were flipping the book in the middle of the semester to try to get those royalties. And that's even worse. And, it's just a racket. I went and I got the book from the previous semester for that class. It cost me $7.50 at whatever, one of the old used bookstores, And it just pisses me off because it's truly killing the student mm-hmm. more than anyone. And not just the student athlete, but the student themselves. But this one course, I want to go back to it. The books for that course were over $400. My books for every other course I had were about $400. So here's the thought. Why does a teacher get away with that? And no way in hell am I going to take that course because that's a hell of a lot of reading. See you guys.
See you, Roberto. Thanks for the call. I just dug up the scholarship numbers per sport. Like, what is the baseball team roster, not including walk-ons? Like, how many roster spots do you have? Is it 20, like, 3, 4?
It's a great question. I'll look it up during the break.
How many? I'll pose the question. We'll go to break, and then we'll come back and break down these numbers. But I want you to think. Well, let's even get the roster number. Like, I just want to know how many kids are, on the baseball team, not including walk-ons, like players that receive scholarship dollars. Like, what's the NCAA limit? And I guess how many does Tennessee have right now that aren't considered walk-ons? Because the number of scholarships they have to divide amongst these players seems absolutely ridiculous. We'll talk about it on the other side. Welcome back, 3 and Out, Fan Run Radio in the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. Tony Vitello has spurned an NCAA/scholarship/college conversation. I looked it up during the break. The NCAA roster limit for college baseball is 35 players. The number of players who can be on any level of scholarship on your roster is 27.
Yep.
27 guys can be receiving money from the university as full or partial scholarship. Do you know how many scholarships they have to divide into that 27 number?
It's not a whole number, correct?
Not quite.
Is it like 10.5 or something like that?
11.7. 11.7 scholarships to 27 people. Football, 85 scholarships to 85 people. I'm pretty sure basketball, I could be wrong, but I think all schools, or at least the majority of them, use the 13 scholarships for 13 players, right?
Yeah.
I haven't heard, at least certainly not at Tennessee, of splitting scholarships amongst players because you don't have to. Like, with the right 13 guys, you can field a very good NCAA basketball team, but 11.7 scholarships for 27 dudes in baseball? I mean, 11 scholarships is not even like a game's worth of talent if you have to change pitchers or if somebody gets hurt. Like, that's ridiculous. That's what Tony Vitello is saying. He's like, wait a minute. I get less than 12 scholarships for 27 guys. Some of these guys are out of state, and I think it's percentage-based. So if I have one full scholarship, I can give 50% to one guy and 50% to an out-of-state guy, in-state and out-of-state. But the 50% still only it's not like they're all out-of-state dollar amounts. It's percentage-based. It's ridiculous.
I'm trying to pull up the list just of baseball programs at the collegiate level, because really when you boil it down, and I do think it comes back to the scholarship, but your programs where they're in a more talent-rich based state,
yeah, of course,
are always better. And I know that mm-hmm. typically is the case for most sports, but I want to say baseball more so than football and basketball. Definitely basketball, because, I mean, basketball, like, you're not really having an issue because you got basically a scholarship per player.
Sure.
But
baseball, I mean, it makes more sense to stay in state if you're not going to get a full scholarship.
Yes.
I mean, if you've got a 50% scholarship, if you're from Knoxville and you have a 50% scholarship to Tennessee or a 50% scholarship to North Carolina or South Carolina or Florida, your family's going to have to pay the 50% no matter where you go. So if Tennessee's, you know, what's in-state tuition right now? Is it 18 a year?
Yeah, it might be 19 now.
Okay. So would your family rather pay $8,500 or would you rather go to Florida and pay, like Tony Vitello was saying, you know, $25,000-$30,000? So yeah, it makes sense for these guys. Yeah, I think I'm going to stay in state. And I think, you know, that's not a detriment to Tennessee in this regard. Like, baseball in this state's actually pretty good, especially East Tennessee baseball. I mean, you've got some really good high school programs around here. But man, like if you've got an ace in Georgia who really wants to come here, but his family just can't afford it, do you say, okay, man, we're going to give you a full scholarship, or do you just hope that maybe you can get away with, well, how about 60%, and then we'll up it to 70, and then 80 each year? I see what Tony Vitello is saying. He's like, this is a tough conversation. I love your son. I think he's a great player. I really like him. I love your family. By the way, we actually need $50,000 a year for him to come here because I've only got 25% of a scholarship left. See you, Tony. Thanks for coming by.
It's also a lot harder in baseball because of the rate in which players are able to just go straight to the majors if they want.
But that's the case for everybody. Yeah. I mean, that's just part of it.
Yeah, on baseball, you're on a level playing field. But I'm saying, like, just from a recruiting standpoint, like, you're like, yeah, we could take on a guy. Because, like, Mookie Betts was going to come to Tennessee. But he's like, I mean, he was so good, he didn't even have to go to college.
Right.
I was just trying to add on to the difficulty of recruiting just because
you're
spending time on getting that guy, but he's not even going to come.
I mean, not even just recruiting. Like, Bud UTK sent me a message. It's a great point. Like, that's why they're going to leave early, too. It's like, okay, so I've played a year, I've done well, I'm in line to get drafted in whatever spot, I can do that and at least be making some money and stop the debt from piling up, or I can come back to school and my parents can keep paying for it. I think I'm going to go make some money, right? Like, it is financially stupid for a lot of these kids to stay in school and get their education. I think, like, for me, like, that's the problem. Like, we're saying that the student and student athlete comes first, yet we're making sure they go into, them or their families are going into stupid debt to play a sport to make the NCAA money while they're stacking up, you know, student loans, future debt for their family, like, whatever. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. It's a bad business plan. I don't know, like, obviously the breakdown, depending on sport, is going to be very, very different. But like golf gets 4.5 scholarships, according to the NCAA. 4.5. So like, if you want to go play golf, unless you're just a dynamo, hey man, sorry. Like you're paying to go to school. And I realize collegiate golf doesn't make a ton of money for the NCAA, and that's why they aren't getting a lot of the scholarships. So Tony Vitello is saying, hey, we're actually making more money for you than you're kind of allowing us to get in return from our universities. How about we do something about that? I don't know why the NCAA wouldn't just say, hey, we're going to let the schools decide. We're actually going to cap it now at 20 scholarships, but the schools are going to decide how many and how much of that, you know, they're able and willing to spend. Which, you know, to Roberto's call earlier, like, some schools are going to have extra money and want to spend it on baseball, and some aren't. I mean, it, like, nothing really changes. Like, it's still the big and better schools that are going to get the best players. That's just the way it goes. The best programs are still going to get them. But why not just take care of the kids in the process? That's what Tony Vitello is saying. And I think that's his whole point with the third assistant coach also. Hey, if they're going to come here, it's kind of like one or the other. Obviously, he would love both. But it's like, if we can't give these guys a full scholarship, at least give me enough coaches to train them, to teach them, to make them better. At least let's not shortchange.
Let them get their worth
out of
it, since we're not giving them the financial side.
We're shortchanging them financially. At least let us give them more and ample coaching. And Tony Vitello, it's a longer clip, but he mentions it. He's like, baseball takes up more time, just hours, than any of the other sports. The games are longer. They're on the bus when they travel, so it's not a two-hour flight, right? It's a 4 or 5 hour road trip. Practices, they play more games. Again, like I said, they play longer games. If we're talking hours, man, baseball, that's a tough sport to play as a student athlete. The travel, I get it, like, it's not football, right? You're not out there hitting each other. It's not basketball. You're not just running up and down the court for 40 minutes. But the time, the actual hours, and Tony Vitello says that about his coaches too. He's like, when we're talking about time devoted to our sport, like, I love the other sports, and they are great, but, like, baseball and softball, it just takes longer. You know, swimming and golf, you might have a tournament, but it's, you know, once every couple of weeks or something like that. But baseball, they play, what, like, 5 games a week? 6 games a week sometimes? It takes a lot on the calendar. Not to mention, their season is ramping up at the end of, you know, the spring semester, when a lot of these kids have huge tests, huge papers, especially if they're upperclassmen. Oh, by the way, you only get a partial scholarship. And we don't have enough coaches. And probably not. And you know, when they go to, like, the Thornton Center, they're like, oh, yeah, we'll get to you guys. We've got football and basketball ahead of you. So they're probably not getting. No offense. And I'm not trying to rank, you know, assistants at the Thornton Center. I'm just saying they're not getting the best of the best. Can we at least help them financially with a scholarship, or make sure they're getting coached well when they're out on the baseball field?
And when you look at the bigger sports of football, basketball, and baseball has a lot of walk-ons that actually have to contribute just based off the numbers.
Oh, yeah. Or guys who are getting, and this happens, hey, I can give you 20% of a scholarship. And maybe that's how you're able to kind of convince 5 guys who might go walk on somewhere else, hey, but if you come here, I can give you 20% of a scholarship.
Or you're just hoping you get some really smart players that are able to qualify for academic scholarships, and you can kind of
slide in there. Well, but that's the thing, too. Like, you're wanting these guys to get good grades and stay in school and better themselves and be a walk on, but then look at the time that goes into just being a part of the baseball team. Impressive by Tony Vitello, man. He's ready to go. He's ready to change the game a little bit. He's trying to bring baseball back. He's going to get me interested in baseball if he's not careful.
Well,
at least Tennessee baseball.
This isn't baseball, but I do have some basketball updates on recruiting, possibility of players coming back to play that might have entered the draft.
You talking about Tennessee or just in general?
Tennessee.
So this isn't going to be a Duke segment?
I have no Duke comments to make at all about this.
None whatsoever?
Not on anything I was about to bring up, no.
So is this mock draft stuff?
Mock draft and Jalen Cohn update.
Basketball switch. So you're out on Vitello, huh? Not a big baseball guy?
I mean, like, I'm is there kidding. More you can add to this conversation?
No. I think we've exhausted it.
Have we ever talked this much baseball before?
No, it's a brave new world. We got told to talk baseball, and I was like, we actually led the show with baseball. I don't think I've ever led the show with baseball, but Tony Vitello.
Unless it was a fight.
When you rope in the NCAA, like, I'm kind of in, and if you sweep Kentucky and beat them on Friday 16-1, I'm definitely going to be in. I'm impressed with Tony Vitello. We'll talk mock draft. We'll talk potential reclassifying point guard.
Going back real quick, because you mentioned Kentucky, I have a friend who
goes
to Kentucky.
Oh, now you
want
to go back to baseball.
Well, just real quickly before we take this break.
You're ping-ponging me around over here.
I know. Just hang with me. And he wanted to make the point that no program finished in the top 15 in both basketball and football outside of Kentucky. Yeah, we still owned them in everything this year, you know?
Mm-hmm. Felt good. Took 2 out of 3 in basketball, beat them in football, which, I mean, that's their best team ever. And now you just swept them in baseball. At their place, I might add. And there was a little scuffle on Thursday. There was a little brouhaha. Because Tennessee hits 2 home runs in the 8th to just break Kentucky hearts. You hate to see it. Back after a short break. Final segment, hour number two, Three and Out. The Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, Houston Crest, Davey Hudson, Julia Ramsey on the ones and twos this morning. Real quick, they call it the equivalency scholarship.
Yeah.
If you put any baseball player on any type of scholarship, it's a minimum of 25%. And each scholarship, whether it's in-state or out-of-state, is simply regarded as a percentage.
Okay.
So if you get out-of-state players, I mean, you're able to give them more money, but it knocks off, you know, percentage-wise, the exact same as in-state. So it makes more sense, you know, for in-state guys to stay in-state, as you said earlier.
That's why we need to just go and recruit more Kyler Murrays, you know? Just put them on the football scholarship and then let them play baseball.
Not a bad idea if your coach will let it happen. A lot of football coaches don't like to share at all.
And yes, I realize
you can take
that's
it
not
it
very realistic
too.
To get a player of that caliber to come in and play.
Well, Dobbs was going to play a little bit of baseball and then decided to focus on football. There have been others in the past.
Yeah, quarterbacks, it makes sense.
Yeah, but I mean, like the football scholarship supersedes, so they could be on 100% scholarship and play baseball as a, I mean, I guess that's like a baseball walk-on technically, but they're on football scholarship, so it doesn't matter. I don't think that eats into the baseball scholarship number. I'd have to check. But like basketball, like I think it was Jomo Fagan played football and then also played basketball, I think only for a year or so. Stanley Assumnu, I believe, used a football scholarship to play a year of basketball. It's happened before, but it is rare. But yeah, like the Kyler Murray situation's ideal, right? Like he's on football scholarship and he's kind of a stud on your baseball diamond too. Not bad.
I was trying to think. North Carolina had somebody who played basketball and football a couple years ago.
Julius Peppers.
Oh yeah. That's going back a ways.
He was a stud.
Thought they had somebody else more recently.
They may have. He was just the one that I remembered. But speaking of basketball, some mock drafts are flying around.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, would you rather start with the recruiting update on Jalen Cohn or kind of go more into what the lookout is for?
Let's start with the mock draft stuff, and then we'll look at Cohn, because I think the mock draft stuff is going to really have an impact on the Jalen Cohn situation.
Certainly. So on Friday, Grant Ramey of GoBalls 24/7 went ahead and kind of got all the mock drafts that were out so far, put a list together, had where each Tennessee player was likely to go, and also kind of gave an update on what's the likelihood Jordan Bone gets drafted. And I don't exactly remember your take on this, Houston, but I'm kind of in the camp. I do not see Jordan Bone being drafted. I just think even though he might be able to have success at the next level just based off the other guards that are in this class and what he has on tape, being an upperclassman as well, I just don't see it being very likely. But I will say that Ramey had this to say about Bone. Whenever you're looking at where he's at, Bone, who entered the draft with intentions to stay there, nearly doubled his scoring production during his third season under Rick Barnes, going from 7.3 points per game as a sophomore to 13.5 during this season. He had an assist-turnover ratio of 5.8, up from 3.5 as a sophomore, and averaged 32.9 minutes per game while pacing a Tennessee offense that set school records in points scored and assist. Still, though, Bone's name is missing from mock drafts as the spring continues. He did pop up in one recently as a late second-round pick behind teammates Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. So I'm going to go ahead and I'll give you the site and then tell you where they have the Tennessee players listed at. ESPN, right now they have Grant Williams going number 24, or they have him as the 24th overall best player and number 7 among power forwards. And ESPN has Admiral Schofield at number 33 overall and at number 8 among small forwards. For Bleacher Report, Grant Williams going at number 22 overall to the Boston Celtics, and Admiral Schofield is not among the top 30 picks, and Bleacher Report, they only do the first round.
30. Okay. Boston, huh?
Actually, on the Schofield last month, was ranked 57th in Bleacher Report's ranking of the top 75 players in the draft. And
57?
Williams, 57. Even though most drafts have in between 30 and like 40 as far as where he would be taken. Williams came in at number 17 on that list, describing him as a bargain upside prospect outside of the lottery. Sports Illustrated has Williams just outside the first round going at number 38 to the Dallas Mavericks.
I like this one.
Schofield wasn't far behind going 45 overall to the Detroit Pistons. And I take it you like that because if he's that low and where he's probably being graded, you can see him coming back and wearing the arms next year.
It's a very self-serving. I like that one. Okay. Very self-serving. Very Houston's interests only.
And Sports Illustrated has Jordan Bone as a part of its two-round mock draft going at number 55 to the Los Angeles Clippers, pick that it was acquired from the Portland Trailblazers.
I thought you were about to say Lakers. I was gonna laugh pretty hard.
NBADraft.net. Whether it was an oversight or just a change in opinion, Williams went from missing in NBADraft.net two-round mock draft earlier this month to number 38 overall by the Chicago Bulls in the publication's latest update this past Thursday.
What's the update Ramey gives on Jordan Bone?
He said outside of that one mock draft we just, I guess that was that Sports Illustrated, he's not listed in any other mock drafts. And if you remember, I mean, I could keep going here in a bit on some of these other sites, but if you hire, you are now able to hire an agent, enter the NBA draft, you can come back to school if you are invited to the NBA Combine and do not get drafted.
Right, and participate.
Yes. So there's
usually, if you don't go to the Combine, you have to remove your name before drafting.
For the draft, or else you lose eligibility. And typically, I don't know the number of invites that they will have for the NBA Combine, usually 70 is around the number of people that show up.
High 60s, low 70s.
And so usually like the top five picks typically kind of sit out unless they're really just thinking that they can improve their stock.
Yeah, like Zion, probably not going to go through the
combine. I doubt you'll see Ja Morant there, probably not R.J. Barrett. So players like that are not going to go through that process. So if they do decline, that typically might allow another player to go ahead and get that slot. But if you're Jordan Bone, you're hoping he does come back, honestly, I think the best situation is for him to get invited to the combine, go and participate, probably not get drafted, and then decide instead of trying to make a D league or G league or
come
go
back
overseas.
For a year. Right.
Yeah. Then decide, all right, it's probably best if I just go ahead and come back to Tennessee, finish out my senior season, and we'll go from there.
It doesn't sound like he's going to, it seems at this point that Jordan Bone's going to need the decision to kind of be made for him.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Like, if he doesn't get invited to the combine, I don't think that would be enough of a reason for him to say, okay, I'm removing my name from the draft beforehand. If he gets invited to the combine, I think he'll go, and then I think he would sit through the 60 picks and then make the decision after that. I think I'm with you. I think that's probably your best bet that he comes back.
I mean, like, I wish him well, and if I would like to see him get drafted, like, just for, I feel like he's put in the hard work.
I mean, we want him back, but if he's good enough to get drafted, I hope he does get drafted, and I hope he's very successful. That's good for the program. It might stink for next year as far as what your ceiling is as a basketball team, but as far as selling the program, and I think he would be another prime case of, look at how much we can develop a player in 2, 3, 4 years.
But going off of his situation, I don't know from a psyche standpoint of just sitting there and watching every other pick kind of be made and your name not be called, if that gives him the motivation to want to come back, or if
Is it like the opposite? Yeah. Do you feel a little embarrassed and you're like, I don't want to go crawling back to Tennessee now. That I'll just go overseas and or try to make a G League team, at least make a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he cleaned out the old dorm room. I mean, everything was in the car. He's making a full run at it. And, you know, Nate mentioned this and we've kind of heard it. Like, apparently Tennessee, when he released the video, kind of had him, you know, tamp it down a little bit as far as what he said about his entering the NBA draft. Sounds like Jordan Bone did not plan on quote-unquote testing the waters.
Yeah.
He wanted to dive right in, fully.
Yeah, I'm still looking, and like, even for people who do, what they'll typically do is they'll do their top 100 players that are likely to be drafted, and like, his name just isn't popping up.
Even in top 100
lists? Top 100.
I mean, how much can you improve your stock at a combine? Like at the NBA, I mean, NFL Combine's one thing.
For the NBA, with there being obviously only two rounds and a lot less draft picks than you have across compared to the NFL, I mean, you really just need that one team to fall in love with you if you're kind of in that situation where you're bone. It's like they really need a point guard, and they're just like, I love this guy's speed. I think he takes care of the ball well, and he's starting to be able to shoot it better. I'm trying to think of where would be a good fit for him, and if anyone's willing to jump that high, because really, like, what's going to happen for those later round picks? They're obviously developmental prospects, but they typically go for people who have a frame and just attributes that they're able to develop even more. And for some of those things, like, I kind of feel like Bone is tapped out. Like, he's not really going to get much faster.
But he's fast enough.
Yeah.
The question I think for him is, can he improve the shot enough to really, and not only just the shot, but driving and scoring? Because we saw him take a huge, I mean, that's why his point production, you know, nearly doubled, was because instead of settling for all jumpers and threes, he went to the basket.
Yeah.
So can he continue to improve there? And does a team think, yeah, he's got long-term potential doing that in this league? If he does go, Tennessee's going to need a point guard. We'll give you the cone update at the start of hour three, right after this break.